You're listening to More Perfect Marketing, the show for business owners and entrepreneurs always on the lookout for smart marketing ideas to keep their business moving forward. And now, here's your host, David Baer.
Well, hello and welcome to another episode of More Perfect Marketing. My name is David Baer, and today I'm chatting with Steve Krull, who is joining me from Chicago, Illinois. We're going to be talking about his concept, a word he believes he coined, and I don't know. I'm not going to argue with him. Maybe I'll go look in ChatGPT and tell me it'll tell me if he's right or not. A word called unleadership. So I listen to a lot of recordings of business books and a lot of leadership lessons, and there's a lot of concepts about, you know, top-down judgment. There's a lot of concepts about including the entire team and getting them involved and creating ownership among the team. And I'm guessing that unleadership probably is more toward that end of the spectrum. But I don't know. So I think let's find out together and ask my guest, Steve Krull, owner of Be Found Online, who can give us a little bit of insight. So Steve, welcome to the show.
David, thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here. Great getting to know you and chatting, and I really look forward to this conversation. So would you like me to dive in and answer that, or you want to phrase that question so I can tackle it and take us somewhere?
I think you probably know where to go from here. I put a lot of questions into that opening, so I'll let you ramble for a little bit and let's see where it takes us.
Sounds great. So when I wore a much younger man's clothes, I worked in corporate America, and I started building a little bit of a Dilbert's guide to middle management. And it was, forgive me for the name, but it was a notion of stupid people rule the world. And I had run into some wonderful managers and some wonderful leaders. And I've also run into people who in many ways had no business in their roles and their responsibilities. And I asked myself the question, where does their training come from? Who teaches these people how to lead, how to manage? And when I went back to school, there was some leadership studies and there was some work being done there. And then I went from corporate America to what I call little America and worked for a couple of startups and dot-coms. And I struggled finding a mentor among bosses and leaders. Mm. And it spawned this idea that there's something broken in the system. We don't train our teams. We don't train our people. The first time I got a management job was somebody just gave me the keys and said, go drive this car. There was no manual. There was no, I didn't even know how to start the car. What I got was I kept my old job. I got 9 direct reports. So really what I got was 1/3 more work, a little bit more pay, and a whole host of headaches. So I had to go back to management school. And I had my boss, who was a wonderful boss at the time. She was one of my 2 Beckys, who were great bosses and really good leaders. And I was able to learn there. But as I moved on in my career, it was difficult to learn. And then I'll fast forward a bit here and say, when I started the agency, I had this belief that you could run a business differently. And you can run it with your people. And you could listen to your people. And you could evaluate change, and you can share, and you can be transparent. And I was lost for a while. We'd been in business about, I don't know, 3 to 5 years. And it came time to mete out bonuses. And nobody knew the financials of the business. Nobody knew what the score was. And yet here we were looking at bonuses. And I won't use any real names. I always use Susie and Jimmy and things like this. But, you know, so we're looking at Susie and Jimmy, and well, one, we hadn't made as much money as the year before, but Susie, you know, she had gotten a $3 bonus the year before. Well, you almost have to give Susie a $3 or more bonus if you're giving out any bonuses at all, because Susie's performance was great. She same things as she did the year before. So she didn't do any worse. As an organization, we did worse. And I felt lost. And I used to read Harvard Business Review with quite a bit of regularity. And it doesn't apply to little America. It doesn't apply to small business at all. But I used to study the lessons. In fact, I probably have a couple of crates of those upstairs somewhere. And you know, you read articles on leadership and you read, okay, here are the six leadership styles. And then, okay, 10 years later, Harvard revises it. No, these are the nine leadership styles. Which one are you? And there's a quiz to say, what type of leader am I? And I was asked once in an interview what sort of leader I was. And I answered the question with as much honesty and transparency as I could to say, I've studied various leadership styles and I don't want to believe that I subscribe to anything that pegs me to a style. And I said, I'm certainly not an authoritarian leader. That's not going to be my style. But for the rest, I think I'm a blend of things. I said, I don't want to be pegged to a style. I don't want to walk into an environment and say, oh, I know Steve, he's X kind of leader. So it's spawned this idea that you can read all the books and you can collect all the wisdom, but really, we all have to lead every day. We get out of bed, we pull our pants on one leg at a time. We decide to get out of bed. We decide whether we're making coffee or tea or drinking a Coke in the morning or maybe a glass of milk. We decide we're leading our own lives. And when we start talking about leadership and we start talking about emotional intelligence, In emotional intelligence, the first tenet is lead self. And this is before I studied emotional intelligence, it was this idea of, hey, we're leading self. So unleadership is born out of this idea that I hadn't found, quote unquote, my tribe at the time for running a business and running leadership. I knew I wanted to do it differently. And then my own business trapped me to the point where I wasn't happy. And I felt the decisions I was making were in the dark. I couldn't ask even my trusted people within the organization for their advice on what they might do in these situations for fear of saying too much or leaking information and creating a groundswell of the wrong support. So flashpoint, the first year we made the Inc. 5000 list, and don't ask me what year it was because the brain doesn't work that well anymore, but the first year of several we made the list, there was Inc. 5000 party in San Diego, and I kept getting these invitations, and I'm this little bitty agency at the time, and we're very fortunate and very grateful to have made the Inc. 5000 list. I kept getting these invitations. First, it was, I don't know, call it $3,500. Come to San Diego, celebrate with your peers. No, can't do it. I'm broke. I'm not going to San Diego for 4 days at this, I don't know, $400 a night hotel and paying for the conference. Kept saying no. Wouldn't you know, as the conference inched closer and closer, it got cheaper and cheaper. And then it said, Steve, you're a first-time winner. We'd love you to be our guest. That I can do. Anyway, the trip to San Diego changed my life. I met a gentleman who's still a dear friend and mentor, and he helped me codify unleadership into what I was doing, and it helped me find different avenues. And the three things that come out of this idea of unleadership, and I do want to get back and publish more on unleadership, but I found other ways to sort of feed the need. The first was Small Giants, wonderful book by Bo Burlingham. Bo's a wonderful human being. He's very gracious with his time. One of the most intelligent and thoughtful people that I've ever met. And in Bo's book, he talks about businesses that are decidedly small and very successful, and they run themselves on several tenets that support their people and their communities, as well as driving profit. And then from there, I found my way into open book management. I said, wait a minute, this is where that bonus question I had a couple of years ago, I can fix that. We can go to open book management. And I don't know if you've done this, David, but I know many people who have. They drink way too much of the Kool-Aid, so they brainwash their entire teams. I used to call it in graduate school, it was the experiment of the month club. When somebody would come back from school and perform one of the experiments they learned on their team, as a small agency, you have to do it. So Small Giants plus open book management. So now we still use two of the parts of those things. And then I also found my way into conscious capitalism as well. And all these things sort of work together to say, we can leave the world a little better than we found it. Even as this little marketing services organization, that we can choose to work with customers and companies that give a damn, and we can leave the world a little better than we found it. And the unleadership concept is really, for me, it becomes this transparency and accessibility for the team and the conversations that we have with the team. For example, if you're not doing your job, I absolutely believe in firing you. We'll check the boxes and you have to go. But I don't believe in unceremonious letting goes. I don't believe that on a Thursday morning, you should wake up and sack five people on your team and then tell everybody else, they had to go, we needed the money. I believe that the team deserves notice of your financial situation. And since we're mostly kind of an open book management company, we don't play all the games they play in open book management, but the team knows where we are. And we can say, hey, if this doesn't change in 60 or 90 days, we have to do these things or do that thing. So I think if I can close this out,
yeah.
Unleadership has become an amalgamation of those three or four things. And it's still my core style is to do things differently and choose to break some of the standard business rules that I just scratch my head over and say, well, if things aren't going well, you fire half your team. Like, oh, that's their people. They're humans. They've got lives. They've got families. I don't want to do that. It's happened to me and I didn't like it when it happened to me. So I don't want to do it. I feel they deserve a choice in the matter.
You mentioned several books there. You mentioned the Harvard Business Review and a lot of these things informing, you know, what brought you to where you are in the way that you've structured your business currently. One book that I was thinking about that is to a certain extent the polar opposite of what you've just described, but there's actually elements of what you described in there as well. You may or may not know this book is Dan Kennedy's No BS Guide to Ruthless Management. And there is a section in that book written by one of his co-authors, I think it's Keith Lee, who talks about different styles of management. The top down, I'm in charge, you do what I say. The I'm going to include you, those of you who are on the ground floor dealing with the clients on a day-to-day basis to help inform my decisions. And then something much closer to what you've just described. But there was one element in what you included there that I don't think was in that book at all. And it's part of the OBM piece that you mentioned, and that's the word transparency. And I'm curious, when somebody new comes into your agency, into your organization, how do they know? How do you onboard a team member so that they know this is what the program is here? This is how we operate. This is what we expect of you as a participant in the way that we run this business.
So there are a few things that happen. Our onboarding process, as most people says, evolved greatly over the years. So there's two pieces of the interview process. One is a values-based interview. We ask questions based on our values and try to understand the responses to see if they're going to play nice in the sandbox. And we've made mistakes, which has ultimately led us to improve the process and the framework. And then separately, I interview every candidate and I have a conversation with them, generally speaking, about how we choose to run this organization. And I ask them questions about how they feel. How do you feel about being able to see the company financials on a biweekly basis? How do you feel about being in control of your own bonus? You know, how do you feel about these things? And I get really good dialogue. Sometimes it's, well, I've heard about open book management and my company tried to practice it, or that sounds wonderful. Where do I sign? And other things like, well, I'm very comfortable with it. We've done it before. And they come in with ideas. So it runs the gamut. So what I try to do is share that with folks before they start. And when they start, I take them through our organizational playbook, which is a collection, if you will, taken together. It includes our values. It includes our 3-year strategic outcomes, our strategic anchors, and our 1-year plan, including the financials. And I walk them through the financial plan for the current year and let them know, if this is an interview happening in August, we'll tell them where we're at. If this is an interview happening in January, so this is where we hope to go. It's just the way it works. But it's giving them that full sense of what's going on in the organization. And then separately, when they're onboarding, they will have the opportunity, and it's self-selective at this point, but to sit down with accounting to be able to review the weekly or biweekly spreadsheets that we go through, that we take the team through to talk about where we are, where we're going, talk about sales pipeline, talk about current clients, client renewal rates, revenue rates, expense rates, and the like.
It sounds like you're, forgive me, it sounds like you're running a kibbutz is the what like popped into my head. Like everybody's a participant in the success of this and everybody knows what's happening. And that's a wonderful structure. I'm going to shift gears a little bit because I heard you talk about on another podcast how you have over the course of time changed the focus or focused more narrowly or become clearer about who you serve, who you want to serve, et cetera. You articulate that to a certain extent on your website right now, saying we care about you as much as you care about the numbers, or as much as we care about the numbers. And I wonder if you can speak to that, because I think that's an extension of the culture that you've just talked about in terms of the operational aspect of it. Mm-hmm. But I imagine that there is a certain type of person who is going to, based on the worldview that the organization articulates, is going to fit and others who won't.
Right. Quite frankly, there are quite a few people that fit. And really, the selection process is to weed out the handful that don't. And I've worked with them, and I'm sure you have in the past, of people you'd prefer not to work with again. And sometimes, I like to say it like this, is that depending where the company is, you look at the whole of the organizational playbook and you make some decisions. The finances have as much to say about it sometimes as the values do. It doesn't mean that I'll fully compromise my principles and take on a client. In fact, as the story goes, a couple of years ago, we were talking to a client who was in the step above payday loan space. And they had an initiative that our team looked at and felt that it was taking advantage of underprivileged people in a certain part of our wonderful country. And I personally, I'll freely admit this, I was looking at the money. Hey, this is a great client. We should pick this one up. We should run with it. And two people on the team, because of the style that we use, and we say that, hey, listen, we want the feedback. Speak up is one of our values. I heard separately from each of these individuals who was working on the pitch that they didn't feel comfortable at all with the business practices. And we spoke, and I prepared a list of questions for the prospect. And I shared the list of questions for the prospect, talking about community, talking about values, talking about giving back. And what sealed the deal for us to say no was, I don't know if they believe that I wouldn't have looked at their website already, but they pointed me to their About Us page on their website and said, please look at our community initiatives there. And I smiled and laughed a little bit to myself and said, well, I have. And that's probably where the question came from, because I didn't see enough there. That leads us down this path to say, in some ways, digital marketing is sort of industry agnostic. I can buy an ad for somebody in the D2C space, in the e-commerce space, or in the B2B space. And that ad can be just as effective for any of them, whether I'm buying a programmatic ad, whether I'm buying something OTT or buying paid media on Google or YouTube ad or anything, they can all be just as effective. And we come to realize that we don't necessarily want to limit ourselves to industry. Now, we'll target industries because there's only so many marketing dollars to go around, and you've got to find a focus for your outbound efforts or your ABM efforts. But it's this idea that we can work across industries, and we've got skills in a lot of industry and deep skills. Now, where we stop is on the B2B side, there's a lot of MarTech going on. There's a lot of Stack. There's a lot of HubSpot and Marketo and Pardot and CRMs and all these things. We stop there. Our job is to bring high quality traffic targeted toward your audience through your website, whether it's via paid media, whether it's via SEO. So as we went about looking at who we are as a company and our ICP is stacked in such a way that we can add and remove objects to it. So for instance, late last year, we put in the object that said, what industry or vertical are we targeting right now? And we said, hey, you know what? We'd love to work with some more e-commerce clients. Our team seems, several people on the team seem to really love e-commerce. So we target our ICP that way. And really at the bottom of it, the last filter is, you've got to be able to find clients that don't break the rules. So most clients are somewhere in the middle, and other clients really give a damn, and some are just jerks, and we don't want to work with the jerks. And they don't know they're jerks always, but we look at them and say, we don't like the business, or the human has some weird tendencies. So I don't mean to say that we're super selective and we're hoity-toity about who we work with. It's this idea that as an agency, we want to have the choice to work with people that we enjoy working alongside and working with. And everybody on our team is well-trained in customer service, and they like to deliver the best for their clients. And when they're trying to deliver the best and the client is cursing at them, that's just not fair to the human.
Just a note, and you'll tell me if I'm wrong, but just for context, I assume ICP, a term I've never heard before, is ideal customer client profile. Is that?
You are correct, sir. Okay. Sorry. I call people out all the time for my own being acronymically challenged. So I'm sorry to spew that at you.
No, not at all. And it's funny because we talk about a lot of different things on this program, and I'll talk to people who are in enterprise marketing, in small business marketing, and we're all talking about very much the same things using very different language. So even within the marketing world, you know, we'll use different terminology. So I appreciate that. So you identified a type of business, a type of individual that you gravitate toward or prefer to be working on projects to support their mm-hmm. businesses and their efforts. Before we hit record, I was asking you about the fact that there's a lot of different ways that you can or an agency can differentiate in terms of narrowing their focus mm-hmm. and articulating the niche that they support. What you've just talked about is kind of difficult, I think, to go out there and say, hey, this is the type of business we support without a reasonably, you know, extensive explanation, because it's not like most business owners will self-identify around
to the right
their worldview, their behavior, the level of ethics that they, you know, have in their business and all of those things. So I'm curious, as you're working your way through the process of niching in this area, for lack of a better word, what have you encountered, and how have you sort of gone about it?
We've encountered clients that shouldn't have made it through the filter, and 3, 6, 9 months in, things had to come to an end because just a lack of mutual respect on either side. So we find that, and we also find it is very difficult to target at times. It's similar to saying, I want to target all enterprise companies that have marketing budgets of at least X. You know, they don't publish marketing budgets. So I could work with a $3 billion company that has a $30,000 marketing budget. And I can try, but nobody tells you their budget up front. And so you don't know. So oftentimes what we'll do is we will look at websites for values, and we'll try to see that they support their communities, and we look for those things. The other things that we try to do is we try to see what sort of professional groups, businesses, and humans affiliate themselves with, whether it's, you know, there are a lot more B Corps now, conscious capitalism, a growing movement. There's a few of these movements that they vet the folks coming in to say, you want to be able to give back, whether it's your team, whether it's your community, whether it's the planet, companies that are giving back. And it's that piece that says that an organization has a little more than just this idea that they need to generate profit. They've got a little bit of a soul there. Mm-hmm. And it's probably more that notion that we want to work with those character-based companies that have a little bit of soul, that want to leave the world a little better than they found it.
And so it sounds like you're going out and identifying prospective clients based on who they are, rather than, at least from what you've described, you putting out into the world, here's who we are, here's what we believe, and trying to attract people based on that. Or is that also a piece of it?
That's a piece of it. And as I explained before we got started, we're not quite there yet. We're retooling our website with some of that messaging. Some of our new branding is moving toward that as well. And the team is asking me to speak and write on those topics as well, just so we can sort of be face forward in that, so that people who are looking for an agency that thinks and acts a little bit differently might select us out of the crowd, instead of just looking at, well, what KPIs can they drive? What platforms will they manage? Can they buy me ads? Can they do my SEO and things like that?
Have you got a sense of the challenges that businesses currently face, or bad experiences that they are having that they'll say, gosh, we need to look elsewhere, and then you show up in front of them saying, we're the solution?
if anybody's looking for a new agency, there's typically a problem. So if, what is it? One of our great sales coaches, Skip Miller, has said, you're running toward pleasure or away from pain. Mm-hmm. And it's our job in the process to understand what they're running from. Maybe they're launching a new product and they're really happy, and that's the conversation. Very often, though, they're running away from pain. They had an agency that didn't deliver, didn't communicate. There was a monthly meeting or a monthly dashboard, and all we got was an email, and we didn't have, you know, we didn't do X and Y. There was no insight into the data or reports. And we'd like to be a high touch agency. We want to make sure our customers are happy. We want to support them. Everybody's got personal and professional goals and objectives, and we want to get to know you and support your business and you. We want to make sure you can sleep at night, not worrying whether your boss is going to walk in the next day and say, Susan, we got to have a talk. And about that agency you're using.
Yeah. Well, I will add that the majority of decisions are based on the running away from pain, not the running toward pleasure. And there was a recent survey that got released on the subject of why agencies tend to be chosen, tend to be hired. And the key point that you just made about why somebody will switch agencies, the respondents in the businesses who were talking about why they choose to go and find another agency were almost entirely around the same types of things that you'll hear in any other services industry. They're taking me for granted. They haven't reached out in a while. The communication is terrible. All of those types of things. And so for those of our listeners who are in other industries, you're not alone. All industries that serve others, you know, have the same sets of challenges and problems.
I take a cue from a good friend of mine, Nick Cirillo, who owned Nick's Pizza here in the Chicago area for several years. And I look at Zingerman's Delicatessen as well, and Ari Weinzweig there. And I compare agency or services to those. I can make a really good sandwich or a really good pizza. I can have really, really good customer service. What happens if one of those is off or both of those are off? It changes the game. So your service level has to be as good as your product level. And when you can achieve those two things, I believe that people talk about you. When you can't achieve those two things, people talk about you. When you're somewhere in the middle, they might give you a second chance. You can get by for a while, but you're going to fail eventually.
Yeah. It's I think incredibly refreshing to have a guest on who is not teaching about how to do the marketing that you happen to do, but instead revealing so much about your own thought process about being a business owner. And I think it makes you incredibly accessible to all of those business owners out there who see their businesses through this similar lens. And so this idea of approaching further content development and you know, around these subjects, I think can be incredibly effective at getting people to say, oh, I like what that Steve guy has to say. I want more of that. And so I hope that you see great success in building that bridge between the thought leadership content that you're creating and finding the right, the continuation of the right set of clients.
Thank you, David. Those are wonderfully kind words.
Yeah. So Steve, why don't we wrap things up by giving our listeners a chance to know a little bit more about your business. BeFoundOnline.com is where they can find you, and whether they are listening with the current website, which is we're in early 2023 recording this, or your soon to be debuted new version of the website, they can learn a little bit more as well. But why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about the agency?
So we are a performance marketing agency tailoring toward mid-sized clients. And what we like to do is we like to bring performance to the table. Our job is to acquire traffic and develop audiences. So what we want to do is work with you to understand who it is you're trying to talk to. We'll develop an audience and acquire traffic, whether that's through paid media, buying ads on Google or Facebook or YouTube and the like, or it's through optimizing your website and generating content to appeal to those audiences. Our job is to bring somebody to the front door. Your job is to answer the door and show them the kitchen.
I love that. And as we said, you can be found at bfoundonline.com. We'll make sure to include that link in the show notes as well. Steve Krull, this has been a fabulous conversation. I really appreciate you making the time to join me.
David, I really appreciate you having me. Thank you so much.
Indeed. Folks, this has been More Perfect Marketing. If you know somebody who could benefit from listening to the conversation you just heard, and I'm sure you do, please share this episode with them. In the meantime, my name's David Baer, and we'll see you back here again soon on another episode. Take care.
You have been listening to More Perfect Marketing. Now you can put what you've learned here into practice when you join the free listener community at mpmcommunity.com. That's mpmcommunity.com. When you join today, you'll receive David's collection of 26 smart marketing cheat sheets to help you master your marketing, plus additional business building training. So don't delay. Join us today at mpmcommunity.com. We can't wait to welcome you.